Good afternoon, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes from January 24th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have one bill on our agenda item today. This is Senate File 247, the Hoppe Bill. The chair will move House File or Senate File 247 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And Representative Hoppe, we'll have you give your presentation on the bill. And then at that point, when they're complete, we'll open it up for public testimony from those who support or have concerns about the bill. At the completion of public testimony, then we'll open it up for questions from members of the committee or statements from members of the committee. So, Representative Hoppe, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be here. I don't know that I've ever had a bill in front of your committee before. It's kind of fun. This is a, while it might be a complicated issue, it's a fairly simple and straightforward bill. It's the same bill that I had in the House last year with one, I think, good amendment that the Senate put on. I think it makes it a better bill. I liked it last year. I like it more now. That's why we are working from the Senate file instead of the House file. Essentially, what the bill does is changes current law to reflect that both the bargaining unit or units and the employer have to approve of a contract before health insurance agreement is entered into. The change that was made in the Senate reflects some testimony that was heard last year in both the Senate and the House regarding refunding of monies from cooperatives back to the union members. It just says that the I don't know if it says bargaining unit members or union members have to be notified if there is money that's coming back because of an overage or anything else. It's fairly simple and straightforward. I appreciate you letting me be here, and with that, I'll bring Mr. Walseth up.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Sam Walseth, and I represent the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. And we've got an interest in this legislation, obviously. This is a product of a long-running, competitive, healthy competition between the Service Cooperatives and Education Minnesota over the last decade. For those of you who have been around that time period know what I'm talking about. For those of you who are relatively new, hopefully this doesn't go on for yet another decade. In that time, over the last 3 years, what has happened is school employees and others have utilized the PEEP statute, the Public Employee Insurance Program statute that allows school employees to make a unilateral decision to enroll into the Public Employee Insurance Program. That isn't necessarily problematic on its face, but as a campaign tactic for the last 3 years, it's become very problematic for school district officials who are trying to manage taxpayer liabilities and costs for their districts, and also for the other employee groups that receive insurance coverage through small entities like small school districts, small cities and counties, etc. What the legislation before you asks is that it put those governing and looking out for fiscal fiduciary responsibilities for those entities back involved in this process. Basically, it puts it back in the bargaining on the bargaining table and says benefits programs and their costs should be bargained at the bargaining table, as is Minnesota tradition. It shouldn't just be a unilateral decision by one of the parties involved. The concern from the service cooperatives is competitive bidding and being able to work with those employee groups and make sure that they're getting their competitive bids in front of employee groups who are seeking PEEP bids. I've heard some stories from some of the folks I represent who, through the process that the teachers were going through the last couple of years, hundreds of insurance quotes were sought from PEEP by local public employees, and the service cooperatives were not always able to be a part of that process, and they would like to be a part of that process, and we think requiring that local governance being involved in that process would get them a fair shot at making a competitive bid. There are also some provisions in the legislation that add some consumer protections. I call them the Davenport amendments. They're similar amendments that were added to the service cooperative statutes by Representative Davenport and others a number of years ago. I did talk to Representative Davenport yesterday. I was hoping he would be here because I think he'd be proud that some of his former work is being referenced.
Boom.
And Mr. Davenport, we're talking about the And so those consumer protection statutes requiring people to receive their claims data, to shop competitively without penalty, that have been placed in the service cooperative statutes 123A.21, we're asking in this legislation as well to go into the PEEP statute. And then as Representative Hoppe mentioned, there were concerns from opponents of the bill, primarily Education Minnesota last year, that service cooperatives were issuing insurance refunds back to districts, which is what cooperatives do. If you belong to a cooperative, from time to time you do get refunds back if the program has done well. And in some instances where school district healthcare utilization has been very good over a number of years, in order to make sure that district stays in the pool, refunds have been issued. The teachers did bring a very fair criticism that they were not informed of those refunds, and that those refunds were bargained locally, and they ought to be duly informed of such refunds coming back. And so the we call it the Senator Roebling Amendment from the Senate floor last year does require cooperatives to disclose to appropriate bargaining units refunds before they actually are transferred to the district. So, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm happy to answer questions, but we do view the bill as just kind of rebalancing the competitive playing field out there, and ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Wallstedt. Representative Hoppe, do you have any other testifiers for your bill?
Mr. Chair and members, I think the school boards, cities and counties are here. They've been supportive of the bill in the past, and they've got some. They may have some testimony as well.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. It is a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. MSBA strongly supports the reforms outlined in this House file. School boards are responsible for making sure school district budgets are balanced and that benefit costs are in line with financial support for educational services. To protect employee interests in salaries and benefits, state law outlines a collective bargaining process by which decisions about compensation are reached. State law presently does not allow school boards to make unilateral changes in the aggregate value of health insurance benefits, including even a simple change in provider network. That is why we are concerned that the current law, which allows employee groups to make a unilateral, independent decision to move into the public employee insurance program. Historically, PEEP has been the insurer of last resort, and enrollment into this program hasn't been on MSBA's radar screen. However, over the last 3 years, Education Minnesota has aggressively pushed many of their members to seek bids and enroll into PEEP. That is why we are supporting this common sense reforms outlined in this bill. For starters, the legislation requires that employee groups, in particular school districts, to get on the same page and decide by majority vote if all the employee groups or none decide to go into PEEP. This will prevent problems caused by the current law where the teacher group may leave a district health plan and leave the support staff behind. The new legislation also requires that the exclusive representatives of the employees and the eligible employer to review the insurance bids from PEEP and compare them to current health coverage offerings. Under current law, employee groups seeking bids aren't required to share that information they are gathering. More importantly, when it comes to PEEP, the bill requires that elected officials play a role in the decision to enroll into PEEP. The last provision of the bill extends consumer protections and best practice competitive bidding requirements to PEEP. The legislation requires to give individual groups their claims tracking reports upon request and allows those groups to seek competitive bids without penalty. The last provision was added by a friend of mine on the Senate floor that would require service co-ops to disclose information about insurance refunds to the appropriate employee bargaining unit before they transfer money back to the school district. We think this is a good amendment and brings balance back to the bargaining table. Mr. Chairman, we'd like to ask for you and your members' support on this bill. This truly is sort of the mega mandate bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Hoppe, did you have another presenter from the... Does that conclude your list of testifiers?
I think that's it, Mr.
Chair. Okay. On the list of testifiers we have that signed up, I have Keith Carlson from the Inter-County Association. Okay, I don't see Keith here. Matt Toburin, I'm sorry if I said that wrong, from SEIU Local 284. All right, next, Jim Granger from Education Minnesota. And Michael McKenzie is on deck. And then Jan, you're next on the Miss Allswager, you're next on the list after that. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Granger, and if it would be all right with you, I would prefer that Jan went first.
Sure, that's great. Welcome to the committee, Miss. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Garofalo. This is, I'm Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk about this provision. And this is quite complicated, and I ask you to pay close attention to the history of this, and there's a lot of details. This all started because we had a bill for a number of years to require a statewide insurance pool for school employees. And after a number of years, we said, okay, the legislature has told us it's not going to happen, and what we heard over and over again is we want competition. We want more competition for and more open bidding process for the insurance product. And I think everybody around this table would probably agree that that is a good idea. So because we couldn't pass the statewide health insurance, we decided to use the existing law in the PEEP statute, the Public Employee Insurance Plan, to provide for more bidding. The law says that the exclusive rep in a contract year can get a bid from PEEP. This is more opportunity for bids for lower prices for competition. In 2009, the Alexandria teachers opted into PEEP. And then since they were in PEEP, more interest grew. We continued not to be able to pass the health insurance, so we expanded it. I must tell you that in Alexandria, they were the only group to make the switch, and they have seen savings every year over what the other employees in Alexandria have seen in their premiums since they made the switch. They saw a 1% decrease in premiums the first year and a 2% increase. The reason why this is so important, do you remember when Governor Ventura said there's a black hole in education funding? It's insurance. It's insurance money. What we have done with Education Minnesota seeking, our locals seeking bids, about 220 locals saved many, many millions of dollars. And I think Chair Garofalo would love to have those savings in his committee so that he could fund programs. Because we had so many districts go out for bids, now there is an effort to take away the right to get the bids. We actually, when we went for the 230, excuse me, districts tried to get, got the bid from PEEP, we did not get the cooperation from the administration. They did not have a desire to get the bid from PEEP. And I would ask, why not? Because it's more competition. When we have some of the benefits are in Moose Lake, the school board, when they moved into, they tried to work with the school board to move into PEEP, and the superintendent is on the Service Co-op Board of Directors and is on the Service Co-op's Insurance Committee. And the superintendent refused to go along with the Moose Lake teachers to make the switch. But the bottom line is, when it happened, Their first renewal in PEEP was less than 5%, the lowest rate that they had seen in many years, and their premium change for their plan then in 2011 was a 23% decrease. In Duluth, there was another big savings. You can't always compare one plan to another, apples to apples, because sometimes the benefits are a little different. If you look at the bill, I want to point out some of the important points in it. I hear the others say that there is a that the playing field isn't exactly level, but if you look at lines 1.22, the key word is and. It says, if an exclusive rep gives notice to the employer and the exclusive rep of the employees, basically you're requiring both of them to get agreement to go for a bid, then you can do it. But then if you go to lines 2.18, now either or, it's or, not and, 2.18, the employer can make the decision on their own to pull out. So could the school employee. Because our members have wanted to get these bids, for our members in reality, it turns out to be veto power for the most part from by school board members on the front end and on the back end. Also on lines 2.22, it says that the program must provide each entity with the entity's monthly claims data upon request. Each entity singles out the individual districts, the Moose Lakes, the Duluths, the Alexandrias, so that the insurance companies can see how much each one costs. Are they an expensive local or are they not? Allowing them to cherry pick or to pick those that are the least expensive and not the others. On lines 3.1, and this was the language that was changed recently, it says that the service co-op may not refund a portion of the health insurance premiums paid by a member entity without providing written notice of the refund. The member entity would be the school board. I want to make it very clear that there is no refund required with this language. The only requirement is that it only allowed if they give notice that the school board will be receiving the money. This is money paid for premiums by our members. There is a cap in almost every single contract on the amount that the school board pays. I have three contracts that I can read to you where the language is that the dollar amounts are capped at X level, and any more costs or any increase in insurance premiums beyond that amount will be paid for by the employee. However, if this refund comes back, it goes to the school board, not to those employees that are paying above that cap or that amount that was negotiated. I also think it's very important to note that by law, in 123A.21, the law that governs service co-ops, you must have a majority of school board members on the service co-op board. What is the function of the service co-op board related to insurance? They are determining the premium structure, the amount, the methods for determining the premium, the methods for refunds, and so on. Again, I state, the majority of the service co-op board must be school board members. Then, if the premiums are set too high, all they have to do is follow the lines 2, 3.1, and so on. And that money then goes back to the service co-op after they give notice to everybody that, oh, we charged you too much, it's now going back to the school board. As far as we know, the only revenues that the service co-ops receive are from school employee and the district insurance premiums. Take a look at the state auditor's report done by Pat Anderson to find out all of the expenditures that they spend money on or that may be refunded to the school board and then paid for other programs. We believe that when that money is refunded, it should go to, actually not a refund, we think it should stay there and reduce the insurance premiums for the next contract. We did a public data request to find out about these refunds. We have amounts of various years. I'm not going to get into it because it will take too long, and I'm just going to pick a few. Stewartville, $80,000 refund. Mabel Canton, $44,600. Fisher Public Schools, you know how small Fisher is, $21,000. Wadena Tear Creek, $30,000. $44,000 total up in some northeastern Minnesota locals. $10,000 in Battle Lake, $55,000 in Lake Park Audubon, Evansville, $15,000, Detroit Lakes, which Jim will be able to speak to, $75,000, Browns Valley, $14,000. This was money that was excessive, and that happens sometime in premiums. It was refunded back to the districts. When Education Minnesota organized our members and said, you can get a bid from PEEP, millions and millions of dollars have been saved by school districts and school employees. I really don't know why we wouldn't require every school district to get a bid from PEEP. A couple of stories and then I'm finished. Here's Faribault. Their premiums went down $67,000 as of a result of the union, not the administration, going for a bid for PEEP. And that started out, their first bid from Blue Cross was a 10% increase. When our teachers went out for a bid, it went to zero. Or excuse me, went to 4%, excuse me. Once the bids came in from PEEP, it went down to minus 4%, a 14% swing in savings for school districts and school employees because we had the bid from PEEP. And then the next year, they had a 5% cap, so that worked out for them as well. Mankato, I've got information about Mankato as well, and I'll have the others share their stories. If you support this bill, you are restricting competition and bids from other insurance providers. Because frankly, it's not happening from the school board. If we could believe that that would happen, and if you want to pass an amendment to say require the school boards to get a bid from PEEP, you know, that would help. Don't we want to make sure that we have decent premiums and the best benefit package at the best price? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jim Granger. I taught for many years, actually over 30 years in Detroit Lakes. And during that time, I was very actively involved in health insurance for the members in Detroit Lakes. I negotiated many contracts, which of course we were negotiating the contributions for healthcare both in the family and single levels. I also was on the local insurance committee. I served on the Lakes Country Service Co-op Insurance Advisory Committee. I also served on the study and plan design committee that the legislature put together to take a look at statewide health insurance. So as much to my chagrin as I can say, I guess, that I know a little bit about the whole statewide idea and the package of PEEP. Recently, I've been very actively involved with educating our members and on their options for health insurance. I've been doing that for the most part simply because I believe in a lot of what Ms. Alzweiger said, that options are very important. The competition that it allowed, we can give you more, many other examples of where simply by moving in with using the law, we were able to force the competition to reduce their quotes. And for that reason, I believe that, this is important to. Currently, the exclusive representative members may choose to move to the public employee plan or to stay with what they have. I have a concern about the simple conflict of interest. As Ms. Alzweiger pointed out, the majority of health insurance is purchased by school districts is through service co-ops. Service co-op boards are made up of superintendents and school board members. If both employees and employers must decide to change, how do you see votes going if the employer belongs to the group selling the insurance? That's an issue that we have seen, and we have many examples of that, that I certainly can share with you. In every district where I help the teachers with the decision to move to PEEP, everyone, we try to also educate non-members and the administration. In every case, the administration decided not to allow the non-organized employees the option to purchase their insurance through PEEP, and the administration decided not to participate as well. Teachers decided to purchase their health insurance through PEEP because the insurance was competitive, both in price and product. Yet in every case, the district's administration was not interested in even finding out about the competition. Teachers were looking for some relief from the rising cost of health care. Ms. Alzweiger mentioned that a former governor, Jesse Ventura, mentioned about the black hole. And we have seen the rise in health insurance over the years that is absolutely not sustainable. We cannot afford to do it. And it falls on both the boards, the school boards, and the teachers' backs. As we negotiate contracts, that school boards contribute. We try to get them to contribute some, and we contribute as teachers some. Neither one of us can afford what's happening right now. And that's why we're looking for alternatives. And PEEP offered us a very, very good alternative. We've saved money, lots of it. They found it with PEEP, yet the school district chose not to follow. I suggest that it is evidence enough that the best interest of school district employees is not always at the base of the administration's decisions. Over the years, I have been to the Capitol to explain how statewide health insurance would be good for teachers and good for the state. What I heard from those opposing statewide mandatory health insurance wasn't it didn't give teachers a choice. Mandatory didn't pass, so we started to do what we could do to help our members. We started to create a voluntary pool. And now, because we've been successful creating that voluntary pool, we now find that we have amendments such as this that say, no, you now have to get the school boards to be involved in this. And I heard them talk about how they need to be fiscally responsible. I want them to be fiscally responsible because my paycheck comes from their coffers. Yet, I find it hard to accept that they're being fiscally responsible when I can offer them an insurance alternative that is less, and yet they turn their back to me. The Advantage plans that was created by PEEP creates a competitive edge that we don't see in the service co-op plan. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I got a note from Lee. One of the things that I think maybe would be helpful for you to understand is that what we've done with the pooling process is that as school districts come into the PEEP program, some districts have done well. Their members had a good track record, and others didn't. And what we tried to do is as they came in, we tried to amalgamate all of those rates into one. And one of the things that we're concerned about is that part of this bill also says that they want each entity's usage brought out. And that's difficult when you do a large pool. We're concerned that in that regard is that we don't function as a individual districts within this pool. We function as one large pool. The benefit of what we've done with PEEP is to create as large a pool as possible. In the insurance industry, bigger is better. One of the analogies that I use with school district teachers as I talk with them is that the bigger the boulder, the harder it is to move it. And the same is true with insurance. The larger the group, the harder it is to change its rates. And that's what's true. And so that if you have people who are sick, the other folks help pay for that. And that's the whole premise of health insurance. So what we've done is created a multi-tiered approach to bringing people in. Some districts, as I said, had great usage rates, and others didn't. And so what we tried to do is to bring this sort of a process together so that we have multi-tiers, and eventually we want to get them into one grouping. That's where we're headed with this. We believe that the larger the group we can create, the more solid it will be, and the more we can save the state money. It's worked well for the state of Minnesota. It's working well for the teachers that have joined it right now. Excuse me.
Lee, did you want me to do any more?
Sorry. Did you want me to do any more with that? Okay. What's happened with the... I'm getting couched over here a little bit, so thank you. I'm sorry.
We didn't notice.
He's done this a lot more than I have. One of the things that I'm being asked to make notice of is that our rates have not gone up at the same rate as the service co-ops or other insurance pools actually have. And the reason for that is that we've been able to over all of the different pools that are the entities that we have, we've established. The multi-tiers, the tiering that we have, and so that allows for us to be able to create very competitive rates. And it saved teachers money. It saved districts money. Thank you. And I'd be happy to answer any questions after that convoluted pass through there. Sorry.
Thank you very much. We will continue to take public testimony, but we would ask if you can make yourself available for questions when we move to the question and answer portion. Thank you. I saw Mr. Carlson came in. He was signed up as a testifier. Actually, we have someone at the table already. I'm sorry. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Dr. Michael McKenzie. I'm here to talk about SF-247, or PEEP. Specifically, I believe SF-247 should be defeated. I've been a teacher for 23 years, most recently teaching AP Economics and Criminology at Wiper High School.
The battle of the AP Economics teachers is about to begin. we have an AP Economics teacher on the committee, so my apologies for interrupting. Please,
I teach mine to freshmen. I'm currently the president and the head negotiator for the Wiper Lake Teachers Association, as well as a member of the Wiper Lake School District Insurance Committee. This committee has representatives from all employee groups within the district. I want to tell you about my experience with PEEP at Wiper Lake. I've been a member of the District Insurance Committee for more than 10 years, and during that time we've seen our health insurance premiums skyrocket. Most years by double digits, a couple of years by more than 17%. In addition to those increased premiums, over the years, we've had to accept lesser coverage or increased co-pays in order to try and contain costs. So this last round, I decided to pursue a PEEP bid because our insurance with Health Partners was expiring anyhow. Our district was very reluctant to give us the information, the data we needed to get the PEEP bid. They didn't want us to include PEEP in the insurance process. They tried to convince us. I had several meetings with them as they tried to convince me not to move forward with PEEP. They blamed Health Partners for delays. They threatened to charge us for the information that we needed, and they generally just dragged their feet trying to make it more difficult for us to get a PEEP bid. Eventually, they did give us the data after I reminded them that they were required by law to give us the information. As soon as we got the data, Health Partners went into high gear. They contacted me and wanted to meet. At that meeting, they presented me with a PEEP clone policy with a very attractive rate. Again, they wanted me to take that without moving forward any further with the PEEP process, and I declined to do that. we move forward getting a PEEP bid. Through negotiations, we were able to use the PEEP bid, frankly, as leverage against health partners, and they gave us some very strong incentives to stay. They lowered our rates 23% in 1 year. They lowered them 23%. They kept our coverage the same as it had been, which was actually slightly better than the PEEP program and better than their PEEP clone. They included favorable caps on the out years for future premiums. And they offered us a basic health policy that was so cheap that our members would be able to enroll in that policy without any out-of-pocket monthly premium costs after the district had chipped in their amount. So in the end, we didn't actually end up going with PEEP. We just used PEEP as one more entity in the bid process. But just having PEEP in the process saved us an awful lot of money. We got a favorable premium. We've got the same policy we had before. This year alone, our policy, Wiper Lake School District, is saving almost $2 million in this year alone. And again, we have favorable limits on the increase for the next 3 years. I believe the current law served Wiper Lake School District well, among other entities in the public domain, and I urge you to leave the law as it is and defeat SF 247. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. And again, same thing, if you could please stick around so we move to the question and answer portion of the committee, we'd appreciate it. Mr. Carlson, did you wish to testify still, or did he leave again? He left again. Okay. So this is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? The page is going to testify? No, okay. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Tabir, and I apologize if you called my name earlier and I was caught up in a meeting with one of your other members. I apologize for that. I'll keep my comments really brief. We just want to go on record as with SEIU school support staff for opposing this bill. There, last year during the testimony of this bill, we heard all this testimony that there was going to be a mass exodus of school employees into the PEEP program, and there was going to be fire and brimstone and all these other things. And so now that a year has passed and all these employee groups and our employee groups in White Bear Lake went out for these PEEP bids and took a look at them, not a single one of our employee groups chose to go with PEEP, but I think a very positive aspect of that was that they really took some ownership and leadership in how they could manage and reduce their own health insurance costs that would benefit both them and the district. And so this is something that, you know, we believe is an important tool to have to continue to incentivize them to look towards how can they manage their own health insurance costs. And certainly if there was a voluntary statewide health insurance school employee program, that would also alleviate, I think, many of the concerns that are around this PEEP program. So with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of this committee hearing. We'll open it up to questions and comments from members of the committee. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier in the testimony, Ms. Allswager had a little bit of conflicting comment as to where the source of the money that goes to the co-ops, and at one point inferred that the money came from the teachers and it should go back to the teachers, and that it went to the school board instead. And having been a member of school board, I never received any checks from that, and realized that she actually meant to infer that it went back to the schools. And any time the schools can get money back because money saved, I think that's good. But I continually hear a huge amount about all these premiums and etc. And unless things have really changed in a testimony about White Bear Lake, it was alluded to that no out of pocket. I would hazard to believe that it's still primarily the money for health care is coming from the district, and that if there was discussion about proportionality, Frequently, the single coverage premium was $0 out of pocket. And understanding that the vast majority of the money, even for family coverage, comes from the district, I would think that a refund would be appropriate back to the district, but I think it would be appropriate at some point if there's a proportion that, you know, comes from the teachers in premiums, that maybe a proportion of a refund from a service cooperative, and that might be something to look at a future bill. But my whole issue comes down to the fact that the majority of the money is coming from the district, the taxpayers, and presently they do not have a voice in the selection of who would be giving that coverage. And I think this bill brings back that voice and balance. As a school board member, fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayer money, and any time you don't allow the school board to have an input, and I've been at a negotiating table, and I know that sometimes that input is minimal on some issues, but at least there is some input, and I just do not understand how it could be unfair to say that the employer would not have a say. And I hope that the bill maybe evolves a little bit to alleviate some of the concerns, but I will be supporting this bill because, you know, again, it's responsibility of the school board and the district to spend that money appropriately, and not having, you know, the power and the choice, I think is inappropriate.
Do you wish to respond, sir?
Mr. Chair, my name is Lee Johansson, Education Minnesota staff. And I would very much like to respond to Representative Fabian's observations.
That's actually Representative Quam.
Quam, oh.
Congratulations. You are the first person to ever make that mistake.
There.
We look a lot like
Representative Quam. It was hidden. I'm sorry, Representative Quam. The assertion that the school districts pay health insurance premiums proportionally with the representatives is an assertion that isn't borne out by the facts. The vast majority of our school districts bargain a solid dollar cap. We will pay the first $500 a month towards insurance premiums. And then there's usually a statement similar to the one follows. Is any additional cost of the premiums over and above that contribution with the district agrees will be paid by the teacher through payroll cost, or by the employee through payroll cost. So the employee is taking all of the risk. If insurance premiums go up, the employee absorbs 100% of that risk. So what happens here is the employer says, I'll pay the first $500. You get to pay the next $200 or $250 or $300, whatever that premium is. But then the insurance company that is under the direction of a majority of members of school boards turns around and rebates back to that district what is excess premiums. Now the question is, if the district can insulate itself from risk of insurance increases, why should they be able to capture the benefit of a refund that comes back before the employee gets their share? Because after all, they agreed to pay a certain amount. Now at the end of the year, we balance it out, and they didn't pay $500 a month. They paid the equivalent of $450 or $400 a month. And the employee continued to pay their $200 and $250. Because of not proportionality, you know, if the district bargained that they would pay 50% or 60% or 90% of the premiums, then it would be proportional. That would be an entirely different scenario. But that's not the case. And that's why Ms. Osweiler brought up the idea that this money is coming from the employees, going to the premiums, and then going back to the district. She also suggested that a fair way to do it would be to say, if there's excess premium dollars collected this year, apply that to future premium increases to buy them down. Then that's taken care of, and this money is returning this way, and we don't have this conflict. But just to take that money and give it back is unfair.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I agree. And I think that the intent, and I don't want to speak for Senator Roebling, but my intent, and the reason I like the amendment that starts on page 3, line 1, is expressly to do that. And I think, and this is where I don't want to speak for the senator, I think that the language is in there the way it is so that individual contracts, the bargaining units, can put that language in so that if teachers pay whatever the proportion is, if there is money that comes back, that proportion of it should go to the teachers. And I happen to think it's a very good idea that it goes to lower the premiums for the next year. And I don't know that we want to do it here. I would rather talk to Senator Roebling about it. But if it would be better to have specific language added to that amendment specifying that that would happen in those proportions, I'd be fine with that. That was the whole intent of that amendment being put on, that we don't want to have teachers paying money in whatever the proportion is based on the contract that then goes back to the school district without somehow benefiting the teachers, whether it's lower premiums or direct rebate or whatever it would be. But I'd be fine to anything that we want to work out that way that helps the teachers.
Representative Erickson, Reiner, and Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hoppe, I'm not sure if this is a question for you or for Mr. Pender, but this is general law, correct? This is not relating just to school districts other than the service cooperative amendment. This is for all those who participate in PEEP, correct?
Well,
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, anytime anybody says this might be a question for me or Mr. Pender, I always lean towards Mr. Pender. But it's my understanding that, and by the way, to committee members and Mr. Chair, Mr. Carlson had to go elsewhere. He did come back to testify, and I told him it would be, I would express his Inter-County Association support for this bill, and he had to go elsewhere. But I think it applies to whoever it currently applies to in statute, and the cities and the counties are supportive of it. So Mr. Pender can probably give you the legal answer there, but that's my understanding.
Mr. Pender, we always trust Representative Hoppe's judgment, but do you wish to concur or offer a thought on this?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this section 2 in the bill refers just to service co-ops, and says just service co-ops may not refund, so it doesn't apply any broader than school districts that get their health insurance through service co-ops. It's not a law that's more general than that.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't make that clear, but yes, I realize that Section 2 refers only to service cooperatives that serve school districts.
Yeah.
But Representative Hoppe, there's not an issue then with other local units of government on line 2.18 about the use of or instead of and?
Well,
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. I can let others speak to that, but it's my understanding that there's not other than people that this applies to. And originally when the bill was drafted, public safety was included in this, and all references to public safety were taken out. Now, as it's my understanding, it would only apply to people that are covered by service cooperatives other than public safety.
And Mr. Walseth, I'm looking behind you. Can you want to pull up a chair here? Did you have anything to add on to that, Representative or Mr. Walseth?
Mr. Chairman, members, section...
I'm looking at Mr. Chair and Mr. Sure. Walseth. Line 2.18, I believe one of the presenters pointed out, maybe it was Ms. Alzwager, that the use of the conjunction or is used on line 2.18 instead of and. And I wanted to know if the other units of government were okay with that. Because I didn't hear any testimony otherwise, only from Education Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that portion of the bill does cover, it's in Statute 43A, and it would cover other local governments. The or is, this is kind of a quirky piece of the PEEP statute where you're talking about employees who are not represented by an exclusive representative. And so that's dealing with a very narrow category of employees, not those represented by Mr. Johansson and others.
Mr. Johansson shaking his head. Mr. Johansson, you want to...
Unrepresented employees.
Unless I'm having the wrong reference to where you're talking, that's not a change. The or that we brought up is found in on line 2.18.
That's the line I'm referring to.
That's the line we're referring to.
And the and says, in order for a public entity to enter
coverage under PEEP, the exclusive rep and the employer must agree.
Yes.
But here it says, in order to exit, or either the exclusive rep or the district can say we want out, and then you're out. And we think that there should be some consistency, because if they both have to agree to get in, why is it that only one of them would have the authority to opt out? It could be and, or it should be or.
Representative Poppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for Mr. Pender, but that's on line 2.18. If you continue the sentence to 2.19, in starting with the word or on 2.18, it says or the employer for unrepresented employees. So I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe we need to clarify this a little bit. Yeah. Maybe Mr. Pender can shed some light on that.
That's a good point.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, in this sentence that we're talking about here, it's taking into account that different groups of employees within the school district would be treated separately, and because that's the way the system is set up. So basically, if employees are represented by an exclusive representative, in other words, a union, they would be the one that gives the commissioner notice of withdrawal. And for employees, groups of employees that are not represented by a union, which might be the top administrators of the district, or just some other group of workers that chose not to be unionized, then the employer would give the notice on behalf of those unrepresented employees, because there's nobody representing them. So,
correct.
So the employer then is sort of the fallback on giving the notice.
Representative Hopney.
Thank you, Mr. Pender and Mr. Chair. And the intent is not to have anybody be able to get out of this. The intent is to have everybody get along, and the school board and the administration to do their duties, and the teachers, and as part of the collective bargaining agreement. If it's not working out, or there's another agreement where they can save more money to allow people to then opt out, but not, we're not trying to do anything sneaky or underhanded.
Mr. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, I learned long ago that before I open my mouth, I should Mr. Pender as well, and he has illuminated and educated me, and in fact, I was wrong.
So Education Minnesota supports this bill now.
That's what I heard. Might be a bit of a stretch.
Representative Erickson, a follow-up?
This is on a different topic, but and maybe the School Boards Association needs to answer this. And Mr. Chair, thank you. But is there not a code of ethics to which school board members and superintendents or whomever serves on a service cooperative has to abide by, so that this conflict of interest is not so prominent as it's being suggested by Education Minnesota?
Ms. Kelleher, or you did say the school boards, correct?
Yes, I did.
Ms. Kelleher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson. School board members, by law, take an oath of office. They are elected officials, and from this bill see no personal gain in it. They have no vested interest other than to see the school district provide quality health insurance so teachers can be in the classroom and students can do better. They are part of service co-ops, but the reason you see the League of Minnesota Cities here and the Intergovernmental Association is because cities and counties also can be part of service co-ops.
Oh,
and they're
okay.
Much broader units than just the school districts there. So as you compare them around the state, the makeup is different, but all three local units of government can receive their health insurance from these entities.
Thank you. That enlightened me. Thank you.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a series of questions, probably for Mr. Walseth, although Ms. Kelleher may have something to offer on some of these, too. But the first is, what are current bargaining units' access to claims data through service cooperatives as under current practice?
Walseth. Oh, Mr. Chairman and Representative Brinert. The Service Cooperative Statute 123.21 Subdivision 12 Sub C says, a service cooperative must provide each enrolled entity with the entity's monthly claims data. This paragraph applies notwithstanding Section 13203, which is a data privacy statute. Right. And that was, as I referenced earlier, an addition to the cooperative statute in 2006.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Wassa. Okay, secondly, what about access to alternative bids? Members, how do members proceed in terms of seeking other bidding?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Brainerd, it's a free market out there, and anyone is entitled to go seek a bid, and there's nothing that changes. A lot of the testimony I heard from Ms. Alschwager blurs the line. School district employees can still get a bid from PEEP. That doesn't change in Senate File 247. They can get a bid from PEEP. They can get a bid from whoever they want, whoever's legally allowed to sell insurance in Minnesota.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Now, this question you may have want to offer something on, but maybe Minnesota School Board Association. But I'm wondering what you might offer on the question of what current district practice is regarding these refunds in terms of how they, some districts indeed share them with teachers and the district? Is there a practice, you know, in terms of insurance councils and how to have some local input into how that decision is made?
Mr. Walson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brainerd, I don't think there's a general practice, and I think these are very unique situations where an insurance refund is issued. I think it's up to each district, you know, what they've done with them. Some have put them into wellness programs. Some have put it back in the general fund. I think, as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, it's a fair complaint from Education Minnesota that some of that money is theirs, and they ought to be informed of it. And that's what the Roebling Amendment does. What we struggled with when we were talking about this in the Senate, as you're struggling with, is what to do with those dollars, and should the state create a one-size-fits-all policy for those refund dollars? And we thought, boy, you've got hundreds and hundreds of bargaining agreements out there, and trying to come up with one method of dealing with those is probably too cumbersome for the state. If you want to take a stab at it, we can. But the proper methodology is to disclose, is to fully disclose the existence of the refund. Then those locals ought to put something, the solution we believe is to put something in the local bargaining contract which says how those refunds are divvied up or spent or used. It's ultimately those folks' money at the end of the day, and that's where that decision should be made.
Representative Brainerd.
Mr. Chair, I believe that MSBA might have something to offer on this. So.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson. Good to see you up there. Today I'm lucky to have Bill Platt in the back from our association in St. Peter. He really handles the day-to-day management of school district issues, and as this was going through this bill, he reminded me the reason that the refunds go back to the school district is because the school district writes out the check to the insurance company every month. So they are the one, they collect it from the employee, but they are the one that actually pays the insurance company or pays the service co-op for that insurance. So that's a piece that comes back. By law, every school district in the state's got to have a wellness committee made up of employees and school district professionals to promote wellness throughout the system. That's already in statute. There is not one way these are used, but let me remind you, school boards are elected members whose job is to provide quality education for the children of this state. And no, not every district used those dollars the same way. But I would suggest to you the original complaint in the Senate is that school board members were pocketing these refunds and taking them home and living off the lush luxuries of the service co-ops, which is not true. In the end, we put more money to have more staff, more books in the library, varieties at lunch. All of it is focused on kids. And so there's probably a good argument that I think we're willing to do, and we acknowledge with the Roebling Amendment that we want to notify the exclusive rep. But I'd also say that the people who aren't here in the room, all the school board members who are elected and working at their job today and can't be with you,
would share that they work very closely with their employees. And if you're lucky enough and if you used your utilization of your insurance rates well enough that this comes back to you, it's in their hands to decide how that should be spent best locally.
Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, that's the end of my list of questions, but I do, I didn't participate in that discussion from the Senate, so I don't know what the accusations were there, but I don't believe I heard anything today from Ed Minnesota that would impugn the integrity of school board members to the extent that might have just been insinuated that the money was actually pocketed. What I heard is that school board members might have a bias since they make up the greater percentage of members of a service cooperative board simply because they are school board members, they might have a bias toward management. I understand that insinuation. From my perspective, it doesn't go to the heart of the bill at all. It may be another issue around the structure of service cooperatives, and I know that Education Minnesota has had issue with that for a number of years, but the heart of the bill, from my perspective, is about shared responsibility between employer and management and elected representation through the school board in making the determination about the participation in insurance. And this statute currently doesn't allow the school board and management to participate. So I support the bill as written. I think a number of other issues have been raised that might merit further pursuit in legislation, but I don't think defeating this bill reduces competition. Bargaining units can still seek bids, can still have full disclosure of information on their claims data, etc. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, any wrap-up comments?
No, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the committee's time and thoughtfulness on this issue.
Next question by Representative Riley.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I am leaving the legislature this year. I've been here for 20 years, and I think I've seen it all on this topic of school insurance, and I'm just having a hard time figuring out today why this isn't getting to the answer, I guess I have to say. You know, when I was a long time ago on a subcommittee in the interim studying school employee health insurance, and I was, along with former Representative Randy Demmer, was promoting the PEEP program, and current Representative Greg Davids was pushing statewide health insurance and carrying the teachers union bill. So this has never been a partisan issue. But then this morning in the policy committee, I didn't get a chance yet to talk, but when I do, one of my criticisms of the bill that Representative Peterson has for unrequested leave. Thank you. Losing track of what I'm talking about here. is that it gives too much power to the school board eventually. And I always think that you get the best product for a lot of things if you have a balance of power in the decisions that are made. I would think that everybody would be trying for the best insurance possible at the best cost possible for teachers. And now that we've gotten that OR taken care of, which had that been the way Mr. Johansson was originally saying, that was a big concern of mine. But now that we've straightened that out, I'm having trouble figuring out, and Ms. Allswager's up here to tell me, I guess, why this isn't a good balance. It's got the school board can't make a move without the teachers union and vice versa. And I have made comments in this committee before that, you know, certainly it is the teachers' money when we were talking about their retirements and so forth. They should be involved in that. But in this case, it seems like everybody wants to make sure the costs are kept in check as much as possible for both the so there's money left over for education and also for the teacher premium. So help me out, Ms. Walsh-Rager. I'm supposed to be the DFL lead supporting the unions on this committee, but I'm kind of having trouble figuring out what to have any arguments on my side.
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, I'm glad you asked that question. It's an excellent question. 230 school district exclusive representatives wanted to get a bid from PEEP. Before they could get a bid from PEEP, they had to get the claims data. They couldn't get it. They asked officially through letters, we want the claims data. We couldn't get it. We had to have our attorneys send a letter to 100 of those districts to say this is the law. It's a public data request. Why is it, Representative Greiling, that they don't want to get the bid from PEEP? These are the people who are elected through the school boards or hired from superintendents to manage the money of the school districts. And if there's a chance to get a better premium, maybe for the same product, maybe a little different, but those apples and oranges would have to be evaluated, why would they not go hand in hand with the union to get the bid? Why did our attorneys have to send letters to 100 school districts to force them to give the claims data? If, even with the current law, we still have problems getting bids, this would take that power that we have now that isn't working that ideally away. Maybe we should require everybody to get a bid from PEEP. If White Bear Lake saved $2 million in 1 year, that is not a huge district. Multiply that, you know, it's going to be plus or minus, certain of that, by the 230 school districts in varying sizes, millions and millions of dollars will be saved. This is the wrong direction. We had trouble getting the data. With this, we'll never get the data, I believe.
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Walseth, or Representative Hoppe, maybe you could help me out. You know, nobody can make a move without the other one, but, you know, the getting of the bids, and you know, why would a school district not get a bid from PEEP? You know, that's always been my favorite program, and I know that, you know, people make charges about what the teachers union wanted to do. Then we hear lots of charges about the service co-ops and the cozy relationships and all of that. But I guess I'm operating under the assumption that it would be to everybody's benefit to get as many bids as possible and to get the cheapest one that's the lowest responsible bidder. And so what is there in this legislation to ensure that that happens, or you know, why wouldn't it be happening?
Mr. Walseth, or Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling. And the short answer is there's nothing in this legislation that makes that happen. It doesn't change what current law is. And frankly, I don't know why school boards wouldn't want to get the best possible coverage for their employees at the most reasonable price that they can. I mean, if they're not doing that already, they should be. I mean, I think that they owe that not only to their employees, but to the kids in the school and the taxpayers. But this legislation wouldn't change that. It doesn't compel school boards to get people involved in PEEP. I'm all in favor of competition, and I'm in favor of having our teachers have better health care, but this isn't going to change that. And either way, and Mr. Walseth can probably expand on that, but if 230 school districts were looking to get their claims data, and the law says they should have the claims data, they should be given that claims data right when they request it. And this bill doesn't have anything to do with that, but that's, to me, that's not only against the law, but it's silly. I mean, if people want to have the claims data, they should be able to get it. So I'm all in favor with you, and I'm not aware that I hope that's not going on anymore if it was. And mm-hmm. But the bill doesn't, I mean, it's really not going to change that from that perspective.
Mr. Walseth?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, the point is 230 employee groups did seek it. they got their claims data. That was just this last year. And this has been going on for years now. I mean, the idea that everybody should be required to seek a PEAT bid, I think you're almost there in the last 36 months. There have been hundreds and hundreds of PEAT quotes given. I think what's interesting in hearing Ms. Altschwager talk about the so-called savings, there's only been a couple dozen employee groups have actually made the leap into PEAT. They've stayed with their traditional plan. And what's not being discussed here is the actual, to really get into the nitty-gritty of this, you're talking about the provider networks that are available through what Service Cooperatives offer, which is an open-access provider network, which includes Mayo Clinic. Whereas in the PEEP tiered health plan system, Mayo tends to be a second, third, or fourth tier provider. Now, the cooperatives can take Mayo out of the system and save everybody 7% right off the top, but the customer satisfaction is going to go down significantly. So what happened through that process of the bidding, and why we have a major concern, is yes, on the initial bid, PEEP could beat the traditional co-op plan. But when the co-ops were able to put a PEEP look-alike plan together, the co-ops actually beat PEEP at their own game. And we want to be able to have a say or have the ability to get that counter bid and counter offer into the mix.
So, Mr. Walsh, I think we're branching off from we're talking about things that are not in the bill.
Yep.
And we can go down this rabbit hole a long way for things we're not talking about. But if I just want to make sure I understand this right, that this bill doesn't change access to getting bids on PEEP right now. Does it make it easier? Does it make it harder? Or is there no change?
Mr. Chair, it does not change the employee's ability to get it.
Representative Greiland, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Breiner said, and as you just underscored, some of the things we're talking about now are not in this bill. It's a different bill. But on the other hand, when only the teachers' union was doing it, they could make sure they got a PEAT bid, and now with this bill, they can't, because if they are in a school board relationship where the school board decides not to go with a PEAT bid, then they can't do it anymore. So I think because of that, as long as you allocated the whole hearing to this topic, and it's now not going back to insurance, it's just going from here to the general register, I'm glad we still have time to talk about this. And I know it's hard to do things right in committee, but I think that is a concern actually that's come to light here. I'm finally understanding this. And so, Representative Hoppe, there's, I think, a lot of unanimity of agreement here about this topic that's not in your bill, that is created by your bill, though, with because if you have a school board that, and you know, Representative Erickson and I were just talking about what an unglamorous job hardworking school board members have. But on the other hand, there have been the concerns about the overlapping membership of service co-ops and so forth, and we all sometimes in our haste go with our friends and that sort of thing. So to alleviate that concern, with the change in your bill adding the school board on there, I would really encourage you to look at, and I would like to see when we get to the floor, an amendment that something about seeking bids, you know, that they have to seek a PEEP bid. You know, if you wanted to do one right now, we've got have to seek a PEEP bid. You know, if you wanted to do one right now, we've got Mr. Pender. I would be happy to support it or offer it, but I just think that may be a boogeyman that's not really out there. I don't hear anybody saying that people would get as many low responsible bids as possible, so I don't think it would do any harm to your bill to add that in there, and it seems like that's the one remaining concern of the teachers union that's real, that that I'm thinking would fix the bill. It sounds like it's been amended many times. Why not one more time?
Representative, was that a question or is it more
comment? Mr. Chair, thank you. It's a question. I'd like Representative Hoppe to do that, and I'm wondering if he's willing to, either here or on the floor.
So, Representative Hoppe, so just to be clear, right now there is no restriction on bids, but comfort language, basically restating what's already in statute.
Mr.
Or what's allowed, Representative Grant.
Mr. Chair, well, it would be comfort language for what is good practice, but the the concern is maybe there's not all good practice in every single school district for a variety of reasons, probably time or whatever most of the time. But just I would like to see, because all along I'm maybe one of the few consistent people in this battle that's always been for PEEP, an amendment to say a PEEP shall be one of the bids that sought. And then I think it's very healthy for the service co-ops to get to match the bid or underbid. That's to the benefit of the teachers union and the school board, not to mention the students. I like that that interplay. So, but maybe that wouldn't happen with this change in the statute without requiring the dynamic of the PEEP bid.
Any comment, Mr. Walsh, Representative Hoppe?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, and I am with you on the spirit of this, and just to be clear, there in this bill or in current language, there's nothing to preclude any bargaining unit or a school board from going to get a bid. It would only preclude them agreeing if both sides, if the teachers wanted it and the school board said no or the administration said no, that's one thing, but they would be able to go out and get bids to at least do a comparison. And I understand what you're saying, and I again share the spirit of it, and I think you mentioned the balance of power, and Representative Breinhart mentioned the shared responsibility, and I would hope that's what all groups of teachers and school boards are looking at, and I'm not necessarily opposed to language. I would prefer to wait until the floor just to see how that works in the Senate, and I'd like to talk to the author of the amendment, Senator Roebling, about it, if that's okay with you, and I'll come back and check with you, because I understand where you're going, and that was my intent. Mm-hmm. My only hesitation might be, are we tying the hands of local government and bargaining if we put something, if we impose something on them in statute? Are they going to view that as another mandate? And I don't know the answer to that, but I'm certainly willing to talk to you and Senator Roebling about it.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to something Mr. Johansson, in answering Representative Quam's question about the refund. And you'd made the statement that, I think you said, in most contracts now, it's more of a defined contribution as opposed to a defined benefit. I'm really curious about your data to support that, because I know in several districts in my area, that's not the fact at all. In fact, it's a defined benefit, and the districts are paying the majority of that premium. So I'm curious if you have data that would show what that's like across the state in regards to, have the majority of the districts now gone to more of a defined contribution towards that benefit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelly, in my day job, I coordinate collective bargaining for Education Minnesota. I'm probably as familiar with collective bargaining agreements for teachers throughout the state as anyone in terms of general provisions. And over the last 10 years, it has become a very rare thing indeed for employers to still pay a proportional share of the premiums. They have, anecdotally, 90% have a dollar cap on the amount that they pay towards the premiums. Do I have any statistical data with me to back that up? No, I do not. But it is a goal that the school boards set for themselves about 10 years ago, or at least their business managers did, because I sat in on a MASBO conference where they told me they said they had that goal. And in fact, they've been fairly successful in doing that. So it is a rare occurrence when there is a proportional sharing of the risk in terms of premium increases. The hard cap is the most common.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer. That gives me hope, and I think that's the more fiscally responsible thing to do, but that's just my opinion there. And Representative Breiner, you'd said something in regards to, I think it was Mr. Granger talking about maybe the insinuations on what school boards are doing or not doing, and you said maybe it's more of a bias, but I think even when we're talking about suggesting that there's a bias within the school boards, I have a very difficult time listening to that and not maybe defending the school boards, because as the conversation here said, these are not people. You talk about a thankless job. They're not getting paid, or they're getting paid very, very little to be on these school boards. And to suggest that they're not making decisions in the best interest of the district by not getting specific bids, I have a very hard time listening to that. So I think that I think this is a good thing from the standpoint of making sure that there are, insurance is a very, very difficult thing to walk. There's many, many moving parts. So to have both sides on board with what is the best policy going forward, I think, is imperative. So I fully support this bill, and thank Representative Hopp for bringing it to us. Thank you.
Representative Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And several of my comments that when I signed up to talk have already been spoken, especially by Representative Greiling. And I want to correct Ms. Allswager with some of her comments as she was giving testimony. She said that it was difficult, that we haven't been able to pass statewide health insurance over the last several years, when in fact, and Representative Hoppe, you have been a bipartisan, you are bringing a good bipartisan effort here. And bipartisanly, haven't we passed statewide health insurance four times? So when you state that we haven't passed, this body hasn't passed, we have bipartisanly, all of us in it together, have passed statewide health insurance. And if I recall correctly, because I'm older now, I think it was vetoed probably a number of times. So I wanted to make sure that, on record that we have, that it has passed bipartisanly. And Representative Hoppe, that's what you're trying to do today, too, is bipartisanly. And I agree with Representative Greiling. I was going to suggest that as well. I would like to see an amendment that talks about Representative Kwan, you said something about saving the taxpayers' dollars is good, and there isn't a person on this committee or in this legislature, I don't think, they would disagree with you on that. And a lot of times I hear the comments about the free market role. So, I think if we have some kind of a amendment that allows and talks about maybe trying to save, because as Dr. McKenzie indicated, and by the way, Dr. McKenzie also indicated that they had difficulty getting what they needed, statistics and the information they needed to go forward with it, with their own plan, and Pete, by the way, helped them save the $2 million a year, even though you didn't go there. Somebody just suggested, I think it was Mr. Walsh said, even when they get a Pete quote, many districts go with their own, their current provider. But in fact, White Bear Lake did that. But you also saved significant dollars to your district and your taxpayers by the free market process kind of going there. So I really support an amendment that says, you know what, why wouldn't we do that? And why wouldn't we say that, if somebody's looking for a health insurance bid, you're required to get a PEEP goal. That might be, Representative Hoppe, that might be a mandate. But it's a mandate that allows for free market. It's a mandate that saves taxpayers' dollars. It's a mandate that maybe some of those dollars can be put back towards kids. I mean, it's a win-win situation. The other thing I want to make sure that I get on record is I've heard a lot about refunds, the refunds going back to school districts. And I just want to ask anybody, I don't care who it is, but if there have been refunds, and in fact there have been refunds, where did that revenue come from? Where did that revenue come from for that refund, those refund dollars? Can anybody answer that question for me? And Mr. Chair, I don't care who answers. You can answer, Mr. Chair.
I can take a shot at it. Yeah. But obviously it comes from the payments for health insurance.
Payments by who?
They come from two sources, Representative Ward. They come from the employees in that plan, as well as from the employer contribution portion of it.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. And would
Mr.
you
Walsh,
would you,
Seth, did you want to
concur with that?
On that, or
no, Mr. Chairman, that's accurate.
Okay, Mr. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I wanted to hear.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the first things I learned as a freshman legislator was don't disagree with your lead and your party. And I already did that last week in yes, exactly, in Representative Erickson's committee. But Representative Greiling said, well, the only thing with this bill is this ability to go out and get a bid. And everybody said, all right, we got that taken care of. But I want to pick up where Representative Ward left off. I'm so concerned about the refund issue. And it's not so much that people are getting refunds. That's not a problem. Refunds are generally good as long as I don't have to fill out the little paperwork and find the receipt and send it back in, right? You're the chair of the Commerce Committee. Can you help me with that? That's an aside. But as the chair just said, the money comes out of two pockets. It the health care premiums, one pocket is the school districts and the other pocket is the employees, and yet the refund only goes back to one pocket. And so what I'd be looking for, and I guess Representative Poppe, I'd ask your comfort level with an amendment that said any refund is subject to collective bargaining. Because what I'm hearing in this room is, I think, two consensuses. One, we all want a healthy, competitive market. Number two, we all prefer a collaborative approach on these issues. They're too important to leave to either one side or the other. And what would happen under your bill is my property as a renter, my property tax refund goes to my landlord. And that doesn't make any more sense than the health care refund going to the school board. What's your comfort level with an amendment to deal with that?
Representative Dabney, does your landlord pay your salary and benefits too?
Mr. Chair, I have had landlords argue that they should be the recipients of the property tax refunds because, as Ms. Kelleher argued, they handle the mechanics of paying the property taxes, therefore they should get the property tax refund, when everybody knows that the property tax is a pass-through buried within the rent, and I, as the renter, am actually the one collectively paying the property taxes. Well, I got a piece of the action in health care premiums, and I should have a piece of the action on any refund.
And Representative Hoppe, I don't mean to go too much into the commerce land. We're in the Education Finance Committee, and we certainly are talking about things outside this bill, but just maybe very briefly, in addition to what Representative Dabney's talking about, I mean, how do, like, I have a private sector job. If this happens there, do we require, do I get any surpluses? Am I required to do that? Or just, without going off into a long conversation.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, the answer is maybe, and it depends on what is in your contract with your employer. And Representative Dabney, I agree with you. I think that this money should go back to teachers in proportion that they pay in, or whatever they collectively bargain. Maybe the refund is more than that and goes back towards next year's premiums, or is refunded, or wellness programs, or whatever is worked out between the bargaining unit and the administration or the school district.
Mr. Chair,
the vast majority, and I'll just present it quickly. The vast majority of expenditures go towards salary and benefits for teachers. So there is, I mean, sort of built into the system, isn't there a circular reference here?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I think you're right, and I think, I mean, again, I don't want to speak for Senator Roebling, but I think this language was put in the amendment. The intent was to have this money, you know, be refunded back to teachers, but the language was such that it doesn't specify that. Rather, it leaves it up to the individual collective bargaining. So it could be different in Alexandria or Detroit Lakes or Chaska or wherever.
Okay. Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, given what I understood Jared Poppe to say, that he would be comfortable with the distribution of the refund being subject to collective bargaining, would the chair waive the 24-hour rule and get Mr. Pender going on a simple amendment that deals with that? You've got the chief author in agreement?
No. First of all, that jurisdictional issue goes outside this committee, but also that's a separate piece of legislation outside this committee. And I, Representative Dabney, the merits of the idea, happy to discuss with. But I would say put another bill in for that and work it through the process. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, it's right here in the bill. We've been discussing what happens with that. It's an education finance issue. It's money that we have appropriated. It's money that the local taxpayers through levies have voted for, that is going out the door to the service cooperatives and boomeranging back in. This is jurisdictionally, Mr. Chair, this is a K-12 finance issue.
Representative Hoppe or Mr. Walseth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney. And maybe this is a question for Mr. Pender, and I'm not, unlike most of you or maybe all of you, I've never been a school board member. But I believe that this is something that could already be covered by collective bargaining. And Mr. Pender, I don't know if you can shed any light on that.
Mr. Pender, Mr. Strom, Mr. Crow.
Not necessarily in that order.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, I guess I don't see any reason why it couldn't be covered by collective bargaining.
Mr. Strom, the items that are collectively bargained right now, do we specifically state what is allowed or do we specifically state what is not allowed?
Mr. Chair, right now there are limits on what can be bargained. For example, there are salary that can be bargained. There are other aspects of the job of teaching that cannot be bargained. So we do a little bit of both in regard to telling them what they can bargain and also telling them what they can't bargain. But I would add to that, we do have a provision in PELRA that essentially requires the contract not to be reopened once it's agreed to for a monetary adjustment. So it might have to work either, it would either have to not withstand that provision or roll to the next contract cycle because we don't allow a cash adjustment within the contract cycle.
Mr. Crow, did you want to chime in as well?
You're good.
Okay. Representative Denny, anything else?
Mr. Chair, just to respond to Mr. Strom's point, which is absolutely correct, and I knew that. I don't know that, I'm not talking that there's a check that I'm going to get, you know, a little bump in my paycheck in the next pay period, but how those funds are distributed. Are they put towards other benefits? Are they put towards, you know, the next year's premiums to help push down the premiums? Are they put into the textbook account? Are they put into the superintendent's car allowance? All of those, I think, are possible and can be negotiated without violating the provision that Mr. Strom referenced. I think the question is this committee going to work on K-12 finance issues today in this bill?
Representative Dabney, we have a Representative Growley.
Well, Mr. Chair, go ahead and answer him.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, and it sounds to me like Representative Hoppe is open to both the concern that I raised as well after talking with Senator Roebling and Representative Dabney. He gave an even clearer answer. So, I would say that we could either do both amendments today right now, or assuming you would waive the 24-hour rule, or we could do them on the floor. But either way, hopefully Representative Hoppe will consider them. We could also, as Representative Dabney's giving me a note here, like Mr. Johansson did to his testifier, we could hold over the bill, and then he could discuss it with his Senate author and others, and then clean it up, and he would have a bill, I think, that would be pretty ready to go. And then my final point is just let the record show that unlike his vote the other day, Representative Dabney did run this one by me. So that's a good note for freshmen, that they should run things by their chairs, their leads, and it saves a lot of hassle and trouble, right, Chair Garofalo?
Thank you, Representative Greiling. I appreciate the comments. I am fine with this bill as it is. I support this. Ultimately, it's the will of this committee whether to support it or not. And if a majority of this committee deems that this additional subject matter needs to be a part of it, then the bill will not pass today. And if a majority of this committee determines that the bill is fine right now, then we will pass it and move on. But should this bill pass today and should it go to the General Register, your comments sound like these are items that are germane to the bill on the floor and could be offered as an amendment. Representative Hoppe, do you have any comments?
Mr. Chair, I think that's well said. And Representative Dabney and Representative Greiling, I agree with what you're doing. I just like to check with the Senate author, and we can have Mr. Walseth and others work on this because I think we all want the same thing. It's just a matter of how we figure out how to get there.
Representative, we let you go to the front of the line. How did I do that? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Hoppe is an honorable legislator. I'm willing, if Representative Dabney is, to continue to have you work on an amendment such as we both suggest and run it by others and us, and we can look at it. If you could do it on the floor, that would be acceptable.
Thank you.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to belabor what I think has been a very thorough discussion on this bill today, but I just had a question, and Representative Breinert's comments really struck me in talking about the shared responsibility of coming up with this, and I think that's true, but there's one other component, and that is really kind of the taxpayers looking at how, you know, what decisions are being made and what bargains are being struck in terms of you know, benefits and health insurance and that. So are the, and perhaps this is for Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow or whoever would like to respond to this, are the decisions made about these benefits and, you know, which health plan to go with and the costs and the coverage and that, is that information that's disclosed to the general public either through the school district's information put out in their reports or some other manner?
Mr. Strom, Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, perhaps someone from the Ed Minnesota or MSBA would wish to correct me on this. I'm not aware of any requirement for that for the provider of the insurance benefit or the way that's provided, if they're a self-insured plan, for example, to be part of their annual report. But on the other hand, I'm not aware of anything that would keep the provider away from a request for information about that. So I'm not aware of anything that would limit a person's request to that, but I don't think it's required in any of the reports I can think of, the consolidated fund statement or their annual report. I'm not sure that it's required to be listed who the provider of the service is, and but others would be more knowledgeable, and perhaps some of the providers themselves or the MSBA or Ed Minnesota would comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just yes, if any of the testifiers would have any information on that, I'd
Mr. Chair,
Loon.
Yes. Madam Representative, the financial question of what the taxpayer's obligation is found in the collective bargaining agreement that establishes what the employer will pay. And that's a public document available to anybody. The contract for insurance, assuming that they're purchasing from insurance from a provider, is also a public document. It's a contract. There is, to my knowledge, nothing that would require them to advance, you know, put that out as a specific, but upon request, it would have to come out. Those would be the combinations. For a self-insured group, that's probably a little bit more difficult to get to, but for the most part, the self-insureds we have in the state are really service co-ops that are selling a product to school districts, and those are, you know, contracts that are readily available to the public upon request.
Mr. Walsett, Ms. Kelleher, any follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, you would find that in Truth and Taxation, as we do our audited budget, those numbers would be available there, and certainly if someone or anyone requested it, we could provide it immediately. It is all public record. Also, in law, school districts are not allowed to decrease the aggregate benefit for employees. So through all this, please keep in mind that unless there's agreement, there is no reduction or movement allowed to reduce in a teacher's benefit. So that's in statute that we have to follow by law.
Representative Lynn, is that it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That is helpful. And I guess I just thought in listening to all this and about disclosure and that, about any refunds and that, I just felt like that was worth mentioning, that the public certainly has a vested interest here, and they should be involved in receiving that information as well.
Representative, you get the final word before Representative Hoppe does. No, you're dead? Okay. Representative Fabian, you get the final word before Representative Hoppe does.
I thought that was Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just we heard the comment here about collective bargaining and so forth, having negotiated a number of contracts in Roseau. I would just issue a word of caution. You know, there are so many different variables in who pays what, single policies, family policies, high deductibles, low deductibles, all within the same bargaining group. I just want to be careful that we don't throw something into the fire pan here, the frying pan, that we really don't want. I don't want to create any more acrimony between the local associations and the school board. So I would like to try to give them as much guidance as we can with regards to how we should proceed forward with this, rather than just throwing it open with a general comment towards collective bargaining. Thank you.
Representative Hoppe, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I much appreciate this discussion. It has been a pleasure hearing from all of you, and it's always nice working with Ms. Allswager. It's been, a year of good back and forth conversation, and from Mr. Walseth, and Ms. Kelleher. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate your support, and I will work with people to try to come up with something that gets to where I think we're all trying to go, as Representative Greiland said. So thank you, members. I appreciate your support.
Thank you. With that, the chair renews his motion to have Senate File 247 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The motion is adopted. Members, we will not be having committee tomorrow because of the floor session. We'll be meeting after the caucus recess. We'll talk to everyone later, and this committee is adjourned.